Welcome to the Wags of SCI podcast, where we discuss life, love, and caregiving after spinal cord injury, hosted by Elena Pauly and Brooke Paget.
Both of our partners are quadriplegics, and after connecting online in 2017, we began the advocacy and support group Wags of SCI, which is an acronym for Wives and Girlfriends of Spinal Cord Injury.
We know firsthand the challenges that come with living this lifestyle, and our mission is to spread education, awareness, and positivity from our unique perspectives.
Join us each week as we tackle deep discussions around balancing life as a caregiver and a lover to someone with a spinal cord injury.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Wags of SCI podcast. Here we go. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week's episode with the Wags of SCI. This week, we are going to be speaking on accessible travel. So today, this week, and the remainder of the month, we are going to be sharing our personal stories of accessible travel, as well as sharing some of the comments, questions, concerns from other women from the Wags of SCI private discussion group on their experiences around accessible travel after spinal cord injury.
Yeah, and the reason we're doing this is because we think it's important to talk about this. It's one of the biggest topics on our private group, and so we thought we would devote a special episode series to this because it's a lot of women in our community love to travel, and a lot of them are too afraid to travel. So we wanted to address all of these issues and clear up some misconceptions and share our own experiences throughout the month. And if you don't follow us on Instagram or you're not a member of our private group, please be sure to join those or follow us this month, because we are going to be sharing some really cool takeovers of some trips that we have done and are doing this month. And so, yeah, be sure to check that out. But before we get into this week's episode, we wanted to send a shout out to our gold sponsor, Robin Wishart of Wishart Brain and Spine Law. If you do not know Robin, now is the time to get to know her. So head over to our website, wagsofsci.com, and click on the Legal Resources tab to learn more about Robin and what she does for our community behind the scenes. So Robin is a Harvard-educated trial lawyer who specializes in spinal cord and brain injuries, but not just that. She also has a ton of experience surrounding caregiver issues. She knows what you're going through. She knows what your partner's going through. So if you need someone to look over your paperwork, your insurance benefits, if you need a letter, if you need a threatening letter, if you need resources in your area, Robin is available to help guide you. So please check out our website, or you can visit brainandspinelaw.com to learn more about Robin and her team. So this week we are going to be talking about accessible travel and what it means to us. And we're going to share some personal experiences about travel and what we've gone through as partners to quadriplegics. So Elena, what was your first experience with travel post spinal cord injury? And how did you and Dan feel about travel? Did you think it was possible when he first was injured?
Well, I think one of the first times we actually ever got into a vehicle for travel was, it was time for the Wings for Life run. Wings for Life? Yeah, that's what it's called. It was their annual run, and it takes place at like 4 o'clock in the morning or something every year. So I remember for months after Dan was out of rehab, we were too afraid to actually try the sliding board transfer into my vehicle, except for when we were in a huge pinch and there was no taxi available to come and get us to bring us to the start of the run. So what we ended up doing was taking the sliding board and just trying the manual way of sliding down into my vehicle and collapsing the vehicle or the wheelchair and throwing it into my trunk. So that was kind of our first, I want to say that was our first introduction to, travel, right? To be able to travel any other way besides on public transit or in his wheelchair. And that was a game changer for us, because every time we would go back home to visit his family, for every holiday, he was taking the Greyhound bus and then I was driving in my vehicle, but the bus would take a very long time, like double the time actually, because they would have to make various stops to drop different individuals off at these stops throughout the little towns along the way. So that was a game changer for us. I think from the very basis, it's like that meant travel. And then we did take our first flight. I think it was a year after his injury. We took our first flight to the East Coast for a friend's wedding. And that was a whole other ball game. You know, the best way to learn how to do these things is literally just try them firsthand and see what kind of obstacles you come across as you take off. So that was a big eye opener for us because, you know, with the airplanes, you have priority seating, basically because it takes you longer time to board the aircraft, but also learning how to use an aisle chair and realizing that the staff at the airline actually doesn't even know how to load an individual properly down the aisle and into their seat. Am I right? I mean, you can speak more about this, but yeah, so that was I would say those were some of our biggest the biggest highlights. And of course, on that trip, Dan actually ended up with food poisoning. So again, it was like being able to be mobile in time to try to get yourself out of the bed because we were in bed at that time when he was getting sick. And so it was literally the biggest hurdle of learning experiences that we had ever had, like going out to eat. I remember we went out to eat one night just to grab some appies, and in the middle of it, the condom calf blew off and we had to basically wrap it up. I said to the waitress at the time, you know, we're going to have to just pay our bill and like throw that calamari into a to-go container because we're out of here. And then running back to the hotel room, trying to get the supplies, trying to deal with it. So these are all really, really like profound stories in the fact that every experience of your life shapes your experience and shapes how you deal with life and who you're going to be at the end of that. So I laugh about it now because we can. That happened about 7 years ago. So anyways, I'll send it over to you. What was your first travel experience like?
Firstly, I'm really glad that you brought up the sliding board was your first experience with travel, because it's so true. People usually think, oh, it's like planes, trains, you know, going elsewhere. They don't think about the fact that a lot of quadriplegics cannot or haven't done sliding board transfers and cannot use regular cars because they only have power chairs, or they don't even want to try it. You know, like that's a huge thing. I remember the first time we did a sliding board transfer. It was like 4 years into my partner's injury, because we had an accessible vehicle. We had a Toyota Sienna van, and he would just drive his power chair into it. So we had never actually transferred into a regular car because we didn't have a regular car. And I remember it was literally in 2017. We were going to a baseball game in Seattle with my mom and my brother. And I remember my mom saying, well, Brooke, let's not bring the van. Let's bring my car and let's transfer Evan into it, because she knew that we would be traveling to Europe in a few months and that we would have to do transfers in Europe. And so I was like, oh yeah, good idea. I might as well practice to see if I can actually do it. And so she has a really small Toyota electric car. What are they called? Prius. It's really, really small. And I was like, okay, let's try it. And we actually did it. And we drove all the way to Seattle, put his wheelchair in the back, and we had a successful like travel experience with a regular car, which we'd never done before. And that was, you know, a decent amount of time into his injury. So I think it's important to talk about these things, because there is, for example, I'm in Italy right now. And the first time we came to Italy in 2016, my husband brought his power chair, and we had no idea how inaccessible Italy was. Like, I mean, we'd read about it, about how inaccessible it was, but we didn't actually know firsthand. So we brought his power chair and we brought the necessary things that we needed for it. And he did quite well. We actually went to Rome, which is one of the most inaccessible cities besides Naples that I know of. And he did okay. It wasn't ideal, but you know, if we realized that we wouldn't be able to come back here with his power chair again, because it was just too expensive to transfer. There's no reliable transportation here. You have to get like private transportation for power wheelchairs, and it just doesn't work. It's just, I mean, when we'll get into that more in later episodes this month, but we realized we had to start doing sliding board transfers. And so that was our kind of first real experience into traveling as well. So I'm really glad you brought that up. And I hope that us talking about this will encourage other couples who are quadriplegics to try and do this for themselves, because my husband is a C4. And you would think that he wouldn't be able to do this, right? Just by his level of injury, but it's not true. He is. And so, I mean, it's a lot of work on my end because my husband doesn't really have that much function, but he still can do it. And it makes it so that we are able to go different places that are not technically accessible. And we don't have to rely on transportation that suits power chairs and that has a ramp, because that just... in areas of the world, a lot of areas of the world, that just doesn't exist. And if it does, it is exorbitantly expensive. Like we're talking about, $150 a day. It's just, it's not doable. So that being said, our very first travel experience was a month after he left rehab. We decided to go to California to take a 2-week course. They were called Project Walk at the time. They're now called Adapt Rehab in Carlsbad. And we were taking a 2-week intro course to their method of recovery. And I've talked about this in the past on the podcast, so we won't get into that. But we actually flew for the first time a month after he left rehab. So he was really, really new to the injury. And we actually learned the first time we flew that he doesn't actually fit in economy seats. My husband is like a bigger guy. He's not fat. He's not abnormally big. He's just over 6 feet tall and he's like a bigger dude. And we learned that he wasn't able to do proper weight shifts in economy seats. And that was a big eye opener for us, because our first flight was in economy a few rows back from the front. And I had to literally put my hands underneath his butt to make sure he was getting the weight off. And it was just so much pressure on me. Thank God it was only 2.5-hour flight. But on the way back, we had to upgrade our seats to bigger seats towards the front of the plane, because we just couldn't do it. It was just so uncomfortable for him. He could not lean forward. And this is one of the things that is just so frustrating about airplane travel, is they don't have these kind of things considered. And it's interesting to me, because I've spoken to so many different people in different airlines over the years, and they all say that they have, consultants and people in wheelchairs that consult on this and that and this and that, and that they're making improvements to accessibility. But from my perspective, nothing has changed. And I know it's very similar to other women out there who travel with their partners. Nothing has really changed. There's still so many issues. And again, we're going to talk about this in later episodes about plane travel and how it's literally one of the most scary things for couples like us, because of just the way that airlines treat wheelchairs, how your chair has to go into the cargo, how it gets thrown around and broken, and all the bad press that's happening with airlines recently. And just how it doesn't seem to be getting any better, regardless of how many consultants and wheelchairs they have. So it's a big issue, and we'll get into that in later episodes. But I didn't really know what I was getting into the first time I traveled. And like you said, it's a big learning experience, and it's something that you should do and you have to do in order to overcome your fears. Because for myself, and I know for probably you as well, Elena, is that you realize that when the worst, quote unquote, happens, you always get through it, right? And you learn that even as stressful as it is, what's on the other side is a lot more exciting, because you have those new experiences and you have those like resilience building activities that happen when you travel, where it's like you can overcome so much. The one thing that is really unfortunate and that always kind of pisses me off is, you know, airlines and the world in general is just not, they're not set up for disabled people, no matter how hard they like to virtue signal and say that they are. It's still not an accessible place, but, you know, I met one of the marketing managers from Air Canada on our way to Italy, And he was talking about how they have consultants that are trying to make it a better experience. And I said, I've heard this so many times. I was like, why don't you get the WEGs of SCI to come in and be consultants on this? Because you clearly aren't with the right consultants, because this is ridiculous. And we could tell you in 10 minutes what needs to be improved. And he was like, oh, really? So I gave him our card and we'll see what happens then. But it's just like, yeah, nothing seems to be happening as far as that. But what we're going to do in later episodes is we are going to read some experiences from other women, other WAGs like you, other WAGs like us, that have the concerns, the major concerns and the barriers that women have to travel. And we feel like talking about these issues are going to create a lot more normalcy and potential advocacy, depending on who listens to these episodes, to try and actually create some change. But I think most importantly, to try and encourage women that even if you have these concerns, there's always a solution. There's always a way around these concerns in order to be able to travel, because you can't not travel after SCI if it's important to you, right? There's a lot of people that it's not important to, but if it's important to you, you have to do it. You have to try and figure it out. So we're here to help, right, Elena?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and it's not even about like fancy travel. It's more so about mobility in general, because after you sustain a spinal cord injury, at least what I noticed in our lives and in our relationship was that we felt that a lot of time after SCI was spent in rehab and just letting time pass until, you know, the inflammation around the spinal cord began to sort of subside. And once you created a new normal, quote unquote, but what a lot of people don't seem to understand is that there are so many other things around spinal cord injury that contribute to the individual who sustained the injury to their daily quality of life. For example, like even yesterday, we've been 80 years out, and I said to Dan, he's been a little bit stuffy, but often he has to clear his throat, like from phlegm. And I said to Dan yesterday, I was like, what's going on with you? And he's like, well, Elena, this is part of spinal cord injury. And like, this doesn't go away. This is just what happens when you have a spinal cord injury. This is part of my like life. And I think that when we start to sort of unpack that a little bit, with the realization that there are so many different parts of your life that are affected on the daily, that travel in terms of having mobility outside of just being stuck at home or stuck in bed or just feeling like you're confined to your chair, and having the ability to move freely when you want to is a pretty big deal. And that's where these sort of like car transfers or having an accessible vehicle is so crucial and so important to the lives of individuals who do have disabilities. And it's something that nobody else seems to understand and nobody else will understand, because especially in being able-bodied like myself, we don't completely get it because we have the freedom just to stand up and walk to the kitchen and get yourself a snack, or, you know, walk out the door and go for a walk, or walk out the door and hop on a bus, or, you know, walk up the stairs or down narrow pathways or into restaurants that are not accessible with steps, or squeeze yourself into a bathroom that's itty bitty that you can barely get yourself in there, like an airplane bathroom. We don't completely understand that, because until you are there with the person who is being denied the access, you really won't get that. And a lot of people, oh my God, this is so frustrating. Well, it is frustrating. I remember not long ago, one of my family members invited us over to their house for dinner, and the elevator was out to get up to their place. And I just remember how very frustrated these people were. Oh my God, I can't believe that this is happening. Oh my God, I need a drink. This has been such a stressful day. I can't believe the elevator was not working and you guys were almost not able to come. And you know, recently I've reflected back on that conversation now, and I'm sort of thinking, yeah, this is welcome to the life of somebody who consistently sees access denied in just the basic forms of living to access anything that they can freely just go and attend different venues or shows or whatever they want. So I think those moments are really crucial and really important for the general public. And the thing about friends and family, and I say this so often, is that they come and go. They come for the nice dinners. They come for the fun outings. They come to nice theater productions, or they sort of, you know, accompany you to this and that and the other. And to them in that moment, it's like, oh my God, this is such a big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a big deal. This is how people live their daily lives. So if the world could be set up to be accessible in a better way, that is something that would be literally groundbreaking. And we say this all the time. Universal design is there for a reason. It's so we can all use it. If you made a ramp, the able-bodied person or the person in the chair or the mother with a stroller would be able to use it. So these types of podcasts are really great. I'm really excited for this month, speaking very openly and very honestly about accessibility and accessible travel, because everybody deserves the right to be able to access places they want to go or venues that they would like to attend.
For sure, for sure. And we want to, you know, I know we are just WAGs of SCI, we're not actually disabled ourselves, but we would like to encourage, by having this series and by having these discussions, we would like to encourage women to feel seen and heard by our stories, but not just our stories, women in the community stories, by their fears, by their questions, by their success stories, which we're going to be talking about more this month. We want women to feel encouraged and just to know that they're not alone in their fears, they're not alone in their anxieties, and that it's just one more thing that you're going to have to overcome. And I think by telling stories and by, you know, just relaying all of this useful information, it'll help give whoever is out there listening who wants to travel more confidence to do that. I wish that someone had told me about how inaccessible airplane travel was before we went and did it, because then I could have been a little bit more prepared, right? My top like thing for accessible travel or any sort of travel post SCI is to just really get it under your in your brain that something is going to happen. Something negative or inconvenient is going to happen, and it's all about how you handle it. It's not about being anxious and spending all of your energy being anxious about something could happen, something really bad could happen. Oh my God. You know, been there, done that. It doesn't serve anybody. It just makes it so that all your energy is going to be used up on anxiety when it could be used up on problem solving and actually helping move the situation forward. Because that's how I like to go into travel anyways, personally, is I like to just be like, you know what? Something is going to happen, whether it's something to do with my husband or it's something to do with the travel experts or the flight attendants or the seats or the luggage or something, maybe to do with sickness. Like you were talking about earlier, Elena, this something always happens. And so it's best to just really go into travel with an open mind and just understand that if you can wrap your head around the fact that something negative is probably going to happen, but use it as an opportunity to really help build your resilience and build your character and build your knowledge around traveling, it will make you even more unstoppable than you already are.
Well, and is it really even negative? It's more so when something goes off course, right? Something that's unpredictable, something that is challenging.
Right.
What do you know, in this life, what do we always say? Prepare for the worst, expect the best, or expect the worst, prepare for the best. No, it doesn't work that way, right? You have to prepare for the worst because that is the reality. And it's not even you. It's the fact that the world is not set up for accessibility. It really is not. So I mean, we're in a different shift in time in general, where I think there's a lot of wokeness out there that sometimes people are like, oh well, I'm protected, I'm protecting myself by saying we don't have to do this and it is my right
to say that I don't know anything about accessibility or whatever the hell. But in reality is that if every single person started to pay attention to how we can truly create equality, well, let's start with this community right now, right here. Why not, right? Everybody deserves the right to be able to leave their home without a flood of concerns about safety or even being able to board an airplane or even being able to board an airplane and realize that their wheelchair will still end up on the other side and not completely smashed into smithereens, into pieces. So,
yeah. Yeah. I always just think it's hilarious because we've traveled on a plane 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 about 8 times now since his injury. And he's been injured more than that. If you count if you just count places that we've gone on an airplane, it's been 8 times, but that doesn't include the flights home. Every single time something, and you know, I agree with you, negative is the wrong word. Some event has happened where we've had to just deal with it. And to be honest, like, there is a lot of my husband even said it on this trip. He was like, oh, there's a little bit of PTSD when I get to the airport. And it's just heightened stress. But it's this is one of those times when you get to an airport or you get on a train or you get into a car for the first time or you get into something that is really uncomfortable for you and there's a lot of unknowns. Your body, I think people forget this sometimes. Your body is designed to be stressed out in those situations for a reason. I remember I spent a lot of time trying to be zenned out and trying to deep breathe and trying to just make sure that, you know, I did yoga before and I was in my best state possible. And my mom actually said to me, she's like, well, Brooke, she's like, when you're in a time like this where you're going on a plane, you need those stress hormones. Your body is amping you up for a reason because you will be sharper. You will be more on the ball. You'll be awake. You'll be alert. These are all the helping hands that stress hormones give you. Mm. So it was a very interesting perspective because I was like, that is totally true. There's times when you need to be zen, but then there's also times when you have to understand that your body puts you in these positions of stress and you can utilize that stress in a way that will really benefit you and your partner and make it so that you don't forget things or make it so that you are really on the ball when it comes to transferring. Or you have superhuman strength. I've witnessed this with myself many times when I've been more stressed is I have really strong arms and legs that you don't even know where it comes from. But these are the kind of things that can be really useful when you travel. And so you have to allow these experiences to happen and not be afraid of them because they really do take you to another place within yourself where you're just like, wow, I really can accomplish a lot as a human, more than I thought. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's a lot of practicality around the fact that it is a stressful situation. You are in a busy airport full of a whole bunch of things going on, but also there's a time frame and a time limit by which you have to operate, right? I mean, that flight is going to board, it is going to leave. So those are some pretty rational concerns to have in your mind of, okay, how do we organize ourselves in a way that, you know, we know that it's going to take a lot longer for our partners to get on there. And then how do you make sure that you tick off the boxes to make sure that you talk to the right person? You make sure you're in a really friendly mood to say, hey, make sure that wheelchair boards this flight. And how do we lock down a bit of security and knowing that wheelchair is not going to show up in pieces? Or what do we do when our partner needs to do an intermittent cath on the airplane and you're sitting in economy where you're squished in like a sardine with a person who needs to pressure shift? So these are real concerns. This is not made up and it feels a little bit like it's unfair. But then on the other hand, you're like, oh my God, I'm so lucky that we're able to take this trip.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And then be able to talk about it afterwards and try and tell people that this is possible. So as everybody knows, we are in Italy right now and tomorrow we are going to an organic farm, and we're visiting them because they're about an hour and a half away from where we're staying, but we're making the trip in our car. We're going to do a sliding board transfer. We're going to pack two sets of wheels, different wheels, because we don't really know the terrain. We're bringing one set of mountain bike wheels and one set of regular wheels, and we're bringing a tire pump, and we're bringing some backup stuff, and we're bringing, you know, some extra clothing just in case. And like, these things are real adventures, and you know, there are things that we never thought we'd have to worry about in our lives, but you know, we do, and we're making it happen. And so far, every time we come here, every little place that we go to, people remember us because of the wheelchair. Like, and that I think is like a really big advantage to traveling with a spinal cord injury, is people recognize you, people remember you, you stand out, but it doesn't have to be in a way where you're embarrassed. It's you stand out because you're different, but people will always remember you, and people will put in more of an effort to help you if you ask and if you're open. And I know here it's like people remember us from like 3 years ago. Whereas like, man, if we were able-bodied, there was just, we're a dime a dozen, right? So I think you can utilize that when you're traveling as well, and draw good attention to the situation. People want to help. Normally, people want to help you. People want to make sure you're okay. I remember this one time a couple of years ago in Bologna, my partner, it was midnight, we're coming home from a restaurant, and he completely fell over sideways in his Baytech as he was going up, you know, the driveway to get into the hotel. And there was no one around us. But then all of a sudden, I looked up and there was like five or six men that came running from, I don't even know where they came from, to help, because they want to help. So I think, as much as we're going to talk about, you know, scary experiences to try and help you, or negative experiences or fears and anxieties, they're important to be talked about. But we're also going to talk about the fact that a lot of things end up working out really well when you least expect it, with strangers. And anything is possible when you're traveling. And I think that people do pay a lot more attention to you if you're in our situation, and they make sure that they go the extra mile to help you out. So I do see a really positive trend that way in all my travels. I mean, again, I don't know if it's just my experience, but regardless, that's what I see. I see a lot of people going out of their way to make sure that my partner's okay. And it is really refreshing. And it does give me like a, I don't know, an optimistic viewpoint about the world, you know, when the world is in a lot of trouble right now, but these kind humans that come out of nowhere and help us, you know, we'll see how it goes tomorrow. But every other place we've been to, there's a lot of kind people. And you'll only find that when you go and visit different countries and see different cultures. And, you know, I just think it's really important to do what you want to do, even with a spinal cord injury. So we hope that these episodes will inspire you to make that trip, do that travel experience you've always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Do that thing.
Yeah. And just really feel like you've got thousands of women that are, we've got your back, and a lot of tips and tricks are going to be coming your way this month. And we also want to encourage everybody to email us and chat with us on Instagram or Facebook, join the group, come and talk to us, and we'll put you in touch with some seasoned travelers who can help you. And then just stay tuned for the rest of this month's episodes, because we're going to have a lot of fun talking about just accessible travel in general.
Mm-hmm. Adventure awaits. So, as Brooke had mentioned, if you'd like to be featured on the Wags of SEI Instagram, please email us wagsofsei@gmail.com. Be sure to include some photos, your name, and location. So until next time, as always, take care of yourselves and love one another.
Cheers. Cheers.